Hey everyone, and welcome to this special feature podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. This podcast was made possible by support from the Hewlett Foundation. The foundation gave us some grant funding a while back so that we could prepare podcasts that would be of interest to policy professionals in the cyberspace. The idea is to educate people in public policy about cybersecurity issues. Now, in this series, you would have heard, you know, ex-Pentagon officials and whatnot. We even had a former Prime Minister of Australia, Malcolm Turnbull, in one of these podcasts. So traditionally, they've been very heavy on the wonk factor. But this time, I wanted to do something different. Recent attacks by SVR, Russia's SVR, against US targets have mostly been written up under the moniker of the SolarWinds campaign. We've all heard a lot about the SolarWinds campaign. And in our view, that label is kind of inaccurate. The defining feature of this campaign wasn't the SolarWinds supply chain compromise, it was actually the abuse of Microsoft cloud services. Even the part of this campaign that did involve the SolarWinds supply chain compromise, you know, what did those attackers do once they actually got access to environments via that compromise? Well, they went straight after those companies' cloud environments. Our very own Brett Winterford described the attackers as swimming upstream from victim networks into their cloud instances. So we don't call, you know, at Risky Business, we don't call these attackers the SolarWinds attackers. We call them Holiday Bear, or alternatively, the joke name is it's the hand-wavy Russia stuff campaign, because everybody's waving their hands around so much about it. But on to why I'm publishing this interview. My understanding of how contemporary cloud services work isn't actually as good as it should be. And that got me thinking, if my understanding isn't that great, then there's probably a lot of other people out there who don't quite grok this stuff, and particularly people on the policy side. So I set out to prepare a primer on Microsoft cloud security. A few weeks back, I asked people on Twitter, you know, who's the world's foremost expert on Microsoft cloud security? And I got a bunch of answers, way too many different names. I appreciate everyone responding, but yeah, it was an avalanche. But a couple of people I trust did recommend today's guest, who is Dirk-Jan Mollema. Dirk-Jan works at Fox IT in the Netherlands, and he is one of their core researchers on Azure AD and Active Directory security. And what you're about to listen to, essentially, is me picking his brain so I can wrap my head around this stuff. And the hope is that some of you will learn along the way with me. So I'll drop you into the interview now, where Dirk-Jan describes what he thinks is novel about the Holiday Bear campaign. Here he is.
For me, the really new part is that they attacked on-prem to move to the cloud.
Yeah.
And that's just not something that we've been, or at least I've not been reading about it before. And that just means that for some reason, the stuff on-prem is no longer interesting for these attackers, and they want to move into the cloud stuff. And they don't do that by attacking the cloud directly, but by attacking on-prem and then abusing the trust between on-prem and the cloud, and then moving to the cloud that way. And that's really what stood out for me, because it's not something we've seen done before, and it's pretty new.
Yeah. And it is interesting because that integration between on-prem and cloud, I mean, it's relatively new in terms of being a standard practice, isn't it?
Well, I think we have to take a bit of a look back at how Office 365 or Azure AD, how it all started. So I think at the start, which is longer than I've been looking at it, but it was just really email in the cloud. And Of course, your email was just an extension of your on-prem stuff. It's just a single product. And gradually, it built from just being a single product in the cloud to this whole identity suite with all these advanced options and all these things that you can do with it, and more stuff is connected to it. And especially with COVID, even more stuff got moved to the cloud. And now suddenly the balance is starting to tip over, that more of the important stuff is in the cloud instead of on-prem. But when this was all designed, users would sync their on-prem, they would sync the on-prem to the cloud. So the on-prem was the source of truth. It was the trusted part. It's what they always had. Everything, like 99% of the infrastructure was there. And there's just, this little one extra component in the cloud. And well, we just want to sync that up with the authentication we already have. And then you start syncing that with AD sync or with ADFS which is just the way to push your on-prem stuff to sync that with the cloud so that they can use both with single credentials.
Yeah, now we should explain what ADFS actually is, right? Because this is essentially a rudimentary form of Microsoft-issued sticky tape designed to connect on-prem and Active Directory to Azure AD in a not-so-ideal way. Can you give us that's a cartoon-like description of ADFS, but can you give me and the listeners perhaps a better explanation of what it actually is?
Yeah, so there are two primary ways to connect on-prem and cloud. The first one is password hash synchronization. So it just takes the hashes of all the passwords that you have in your on-prem Active Directory, and it pushes those to the cloud. So then both sides have the same hashed passwords, and users can also sign in on the cloud with the passwords. So that's one of the ways. And while some companies, or traditionally not many companies, were like, we're happy with synchronizing all our passwords to the cloud, because then the cloud was scary and you don't want to have all your passwords in the cloud because who knows what they'll attack there or something. So there are other ways. And the secondary way is ADFS, which stands for Active Directory Federation Services. And that's really, ADFS is only a Microsoft implementation of a broader set of standards. But the simple down way is that it uses cryptography, public-private keys, that both sides have a set of cryptographic keys, and they can issue like tokens, which are like certificates, which say, this user authenticated on-prem. Here's this signed certificate that it's really that user, and it gives that to the cloud, and the cloud says, well, it's signed by on-prem, so it's probably true, right? Because I trust that on-prem, the certificate checks out, and everything's fine.
Well, that's the theory, but yes, go on. Sorry. Yeah.
So that's the theory, and yeah, it's a nice way of like having this or like integrating with third parties that you don't necessarily want to hand over all your credentials, but you do want to build like a trust web of saying, okay, here's my credentials, and this part is authorized to authorized users, and you just trust that I did my job and that all is fine.
That's right. So the portion in the cloud can hold some public key material that it can use to verify that, you know, a user token was generated by the right private key material, which is held on-prem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So that's ADFS. And then you've got your, there are different ways and more modern and contemporary. I mean, there are some people now, they're using Azure AD as like their primary sort of directory, right? And that feeds back to on-prem. So it can work the other way as well, can't it?
Yeah, so password hash synchronization, you can actually do it both ways. I haven't played much with the part that pushes it back from the cloud to on-prem. But if you use password hash synchronization, then, or actually you can also use only authentication in the cloud without any on-prem components,
yeah,
then it's called managed authentication, which is like, so that's like the two states. You either have managed authentication, in which you either sync or do not sync passwords either way, or you have federated authentication, where all the accounts are really federated or trusted back to a different component, which is usually the on-prem infrastructure.
Usually, yes, unless the SVR have been modifying some of your settings, right? And then they can do all sorts of fun stuff. But look, we're still sort of outlining how this stuff all works. I think it's worth pointing out, too, that there are some parallels from the old school that are probably worth introducing, right? Because you've got your normal user access to their email and to their files and all of that good stuff. And then you've got sort of OAuth-based, like application style access, that where users can install applications basically in their cloud account, and those applications can interact with the services that they have in different ways, right? Now, we've heard, and anyone who listens to this show over a long period of time, we would have heard about how there are malicious OAuth apps, right? This is a great way for attackers to do things like bypass two-factor authentication. Because if you can trick a user into installing a malicious OAuth app, that's it. You're in there, you're golden. And then where it gets really interesting too is you've got these sort of highly privileged OAuth style access, right? Where it's like the parallel that I'm trying to describe, it's like a service account, but for your cloud infrastructure, which is very difficult for an old man like me to wrap my head around. But could you walk us through perhaps in not such cartoonish terms, like how the different levels of access to cloud infrastructure work, because that's interesting stuff.
Right. So this ties into the whole complex topic of cloud applications.
Yeah.
To start with that, it's probably good to say that Azure AD, it's really the identity part of Office 365 and also of all the other Azure infrastructure, so it really handles all the identity stuff. And then you have all these applications. And if you have Office 365, there are literally like by default already over 200 connected applications to it. So it's a big mess, but you have to see Azure AD as like a central point of authority, and you log in on there like all the time. Like if you're browsing Office 365, you'll see like login requests on every new tab you open, and it all goes back to Azure AD, which then issues a token, and that then sends to the application. Okay, you can now do this, do that, and the application can then talk to another application and get some of your data, and that's all done by these OAuth protocols. And it gets really interesting because some of these applications can also perform things like without a signed-in user. So if a user is signed in, then a application has certain permissions. They are predefined if it's a Microsoft application or if it's a third-party application, they should be approved either by the user or an administrator. And that says, okay, if I sign in to whatever third-party application, it can, for example, read my email because it's an email application. So it does kind of need to read that email, right? On the other hand, you also have some applications which needs to perform stuff in the background, like, for example, like scan your email for keywords or sensitive data or whatever you can come up with.
So yeah, like a DLP product. That's a good example. Yeah.
Yeah. So that product wouldn't do that by having a user sign in one for one all the time and then scan their email, but it would need to access everyone's email, like in a batch job or a cron job or a server job. And that's why you can also like assign applications with permissions to read everyone's email. And then these applications either have a password themselves or a certificate, and then they can just perform these actions whenever they need to.
Now, I think you've actually done a very good job of laying the groundwork where probably the people listening are thinking, oh, I can see a few little opportunities for mayhem here. There's a saying, right, which is like, you know, hackers are going to hit you where you're not looking, right? And I certainly feel like most organizations, maybe not some of the big, more security conscious organizations, but certainly like under-resourced organizations, and that's a lot of them, and smaller organizations, they're not really aware of these complexities and this nuance, and B, they're not looking necessarily to see if the applications they've installed into their cloud environment are A, legitimate, and B, behaving in the way that you would expect them to behave. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really hard to monitor applications and the permissions they have. If you look at some of the tools published, they're all kind of PowerShell scripts and they output a lot of GUIDs and stuff.
We'll get to Microsoft's advice in a bit. But yeah, they say, what are you talking about? We give people plenty of advice. And there's a, you know, 600-page tutorial on how to do it with PowerShell for, you know, level 10 ninjas. But anyway, please continue.
Yeah, so it's really hard to properly audit this. And you have to really be aware of how these permissions work in order to set your own monitoring of like, okay, this permission was assigned and this is what it's doing. Otherwise, you're not going to get a grip on that. So if you allow, and especially if you allow your users to give their own permissions, which is just, well, I can see how it could be useful, but that's just like a bomb waiting to go off.
But that's the default. That's the default, isn't it, for O365, is Microsoft allows users to install absolutely suicidal applications where it's basically like they give, you know, someone gives the user a gun and says, shoot yourself in the face with it, and they do, and Microsoft doesn't interfere at this point.
Well, technically, they say, do you want to shoot yourself in the face? And then they click yes.
Never rely on a user to say they don't want to shoot themselves in the face. Not that it's their fault, okay? Like, I hope that's coming through. So, okay, so we've established that these OAuth applications, they're like service-level access. They basically aren't really observed by most organizations that are using them. There are some that are in there by default. There are some that are in there for legitimate purposes. And then there are malicious kinds. Now, the other part that we've been talking about is identity and users and access. Again, it seems like this is difficult to monitor. when it comes to cloud infrastructure like O365. Is it quite opaque and difficult to actually monitor your users and see that they're actually behaving in a way that you would expect them to, and that they're correctly authenticated and, you know, all of that good stuff?
I think it's difficult, not primarily because the question you're asking is so difficult, but because it's just a really new thing.
Yeah.
So the primary thing about cloud is that you can access it from anywhere.
So it's not difficult. It's just people aren't doing it because it's unfamiliar.
Well, it's a bit of both, but because the cloud is it's accessible from anywhere and people work from anywhere, and especially if you're a global company, you have people using the cloud from anywhere. It's not like you have people sitting in an office and they're all doing something from a trusted location, which is like the first filtering of bad stuff that you already know, like, oh, they're in the office or they're on the VPN, which only their laptops can go to.
Yeah, no. We've moved from a network-centric model to an identity-centric model, right? I think is what you're getting at.
Yes.
Yeah. So people are sort of not quite au fait with that yet. Now let's bring in some of this SVR stuff, right? Well, not even. We don't even need to do that. Let me ask you this. Where are you most weak as a O365 or M365 user? Where is an attacker going to find, how are they going to target your O365 environment? What's the most likely way, or what's the best way? Not necessarily the most likely, but what's the best?
So this is the interesting part, because this traditionally for the past few years, it's always been business email compromise. Someone guesses or gathers credentials somewhere, signs in on email and does their thing, right? So that's like the low hanging bar, because all you need are a few credentials that are often either weak, or you can easily fish them for them. It's very low cost, and you can get access to email and all kind of other interesting information, and you can just do your bad actor business that way. Now the new thing that, like, there's a lot of tools nowadays to actually combat that. By far, not everyone's using that yet, but that's a different story. But you can actually have all kind of advanced policies, starting with multi-factor authentication, but building with device compliance and trusted devices and all that kind of stuff. So you only allow access to your Office 365 environment from devices you trust, which kind of reintroduces that network.
Unfortunately, DJ, the problem with business email compromise is quite often it's someone you're doing business with sending you a bum invoice, which is what gets you into trouble, and you can't really do anything about that. But yes, if everybody starts locking down their email, we will certainly be in a better place with BEC. What about some more sort of proper hacking where they're actually after data? Like, if I wanted to actually compromise someone's O365 environment properly, not like a lame BEC person, but like a real proper black hat wearing hacker, how would I do it?
Yeah, so this is where it gets interesting, because if you configure it correctly, it's actually really hard to elevate privileges in Office 365, because everything is really identity focused. So it's not like with on-prem Active Directory, where there's always a service exposed somewhere which you can get onto, and then you're on a server which other users logged in. It doesn't really work that way. So you have to obtain some identity of someone who already has these high privileges. And that's where the difficult part lies, because then you're either going to have to perform targeted phishing on an administrator, or you're going to have to find some other weakness to get access to those accounts.
But once you get that access, it is party time, because no one's looking.
Yeah, well, that's always the case, right? If you have the highest access, then, you know, it's just kind of game over.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we should point out too,
same with cloud.
What you were just saying too, I mean, like, you know, the OAuth apps are big and scary things, but if you OAuth fish a typical user, that's going to get you access to their mailbox, to their files. As you say, because it's an identity-centric environment, they're not going to be able to then propagate that attack and move laterally like they would through getting access to someone's computer on their normal, to their Windows computer on a normal enterprise network.
Exactly. So they're trying to look for the next weakness, so to say, or the next weak component. And in this case, it turned out to be actually the on-prem network that was the weak component and the entry to the cloud. I think partly because they already know on-prem hacking. Everyone's been doing that for years and years and years. And they also noticed that on-prem, there are just some sensitive components like ADFS, which if you gain access to it, you can bypass a lot of the cloud security measures.
That's right. Yeah.
That's just that starts to become the weakest link, because if you really lock down your privileged administrators, it's just very hard to get into that. And maybe the on-prem network is then easier to get access to, and you access some component that isn't as tightly locked down, but still has high privileges in the cloud.
So, I mean, let's talk about that, right? Because it seems like what these attackers, and we're just using them as an example, this isn't so much a podcast about SVR attacks as it is about O365 and M365 environments. What they would do, though, they were clever, right? They were actually very clever, because they stole the key material that was used for a lot of this cloud auth, and they took it away, right? So they exited the on-prem environment. Then they basically set them up, like in some instances, they actually set them up as a federated identity provider, and then added themselves to this like O365 config, right? So they're just like, oh yeah, you can rely on the on-prem to authenticate users, but you can also rely on this shady domain over here run by a division of the Russian intelligence community. You can rely on that as well to authenticate users. And once they've done that, I mean, they can just come and go as anyone as they please, right?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot in Azure AD that's not yet explored regarding these heavy post-compromise actions and backdoor actions. It's not really something a lot of people consider, because everyone's like, well, if you're domain admin or global admin, yeah, of course you can hack everything and you can backdoor everything, and that's kind of expected. To see people doing it and to see people doing things that weren't really commonplace before, that's a whole different story.
Well, I think to see people doing it easily with a few click boxes, right? Like a few clicky, pointy clicky their way to owning your entire environment. I think that's the bit that got me, right? Is when you're reading through it, you're just like, okay, they got this certificate, they logged in, they altered the config, and then holy shit, that was it. It was game over, and for quite a long time, and no one detected it. That was the thing that really got me.
Yeah, it's not like some red light will start flashing if you add a new domain or a new certificate somewhere, or if someone breaks in on your ADFS server and steals your private key.
But shouldn't a red light start flashing at that point? I mean, really? I mean, you know, if you add a forwarding rule in Gmail, right? You got a notification that stays there for like, what is it, a week or a month or whatever the hell it is, right? Like, why don't we have, so that's, you know, let's get into the part where we give Microsoft a bit of a kick in the ass. Like, why is it so easy? Once you've gone into someone's on-prem, you've got their secret keys. Yeah, sure, right? It's game over at that point, right? If you've got the key material that is the root of trust for authenticating all of your users, it's game over. Whether that key should be stored in the clear or in a HSM, that's a whole other discussion. But it shouldn't be then that easy to set up wholesale stealthy access. Is there anything that you can think of that Microsoft could do to make this type of scenario less likely to occur?
Well, I think everyone at Microsoft is also thinking very hard about that right now, because it was a new thing. And I think everyone that's working on these things at Microsoft also got quite a scare that, okay, this is where the attackers are now, and we're not monitoring this enough, or we're not alerting users enough for this. I would imagine that, like, for example, I've done some research, not on ADFS, but on the synchronization account for the other attack, which wasn't abused, but it also offers various abuse possibilities. And it last time I checked, the synchronization account can just do stuff that it doesn't need to do, and it doesn't raise any alarms. No one is monitoring for it, because I think no one is abusing it. And it's always the chicken egg.
Yeah.
Are you going to monitor for things that we know are possible, but no one is doing it yet? Or are you going to monitor the things that, you know, people are abusing?
But could more secure defaults play a role here as part of the solution? Because it seems to me that most people don't really need to add rando domains to federate their identity services, right? Like, it just seems like that's the sort of thing that if it shouldn't be hard, like it should require, you know, it shouldn't be that easy. Let's put it that way.
Well, I wouldn't mind being easy, but I would expect some big alarms to go off and emails to all the existing accounts like, hey, a new domain was just added. If you're not doing this, you're in trouble. If yeah. you're doing this, well, just continue on your merry way.
Do they sell products under their E5 licenses that actually deal with this? Because that's kind of a Microsoft thing a lot of the time.
I'm not sure. It could be part of Cloud App Security, or they could have some Sentinel rules for it.
Yeah, I mean, the cloud app stuff, I mean, that's where we were talking earlier about how Microsoft does issue quite good guidance on how to implement better control on the types of OAuth apps that users can authorize into cloud environments. But it's, you know, it's pretty dense stuff that requires a, you know, the bar is pretty high for entry on that, in my view. But they do have some pretty nice pointy clicky tools, but you have to pay an awful lot for them. It's my view that maybe they should start bundling some of that stuff just into the base product. I mean, is that something that you think about as well, or is that sort of getting into the realm of, like, you know, tech politics and you don't even want to go there?
I don't usually want to touch politics, but I do think they could make more security tooling available by default. Like, until a year ago, they didn't even have the security default, which is like MFA for everyone. And I think even MFA for your non-admins was still considered a premium. So I'm happy they actually made that possible to do that without the top tier license. But I think if you make your product complex to use, you should also be offering the tools to make it secure and not necessarily at a premium. But that's always a politics discussion. Like, if you want really advanced security, should you be paying for it, or should you be getting that as part of the product? That's something I'm going to go into.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the whole thing too, where, again, I mean, there are some parallels here to the sort of Windows NT and 2000 days, where, you know, incredibly powerful server technology for its time, like pretty good stuff, right? But just everything on, all of the bells and whistles singing and jingling, you know, for all eternity, just everything turned on and available all at once, right? So they actually did come along and make some changes to the defaults. And that's what I sort of wonder, is there a way that you could do, you know, simpler O365? Because I'd imagine that for a lot of companies, hey, how's this, DJ? Instead of trying to sell them the technology to monitor for this, why don't they make it a plus cost option if you want to federate identity services to a different domain? Do you know what I mean? Like, why don't you charge money for the dangerous thing?
Yeah, that could actually be a good option. So I think it's mostly actually the larger companies with a lot of budget that do use federation. All these smaller shops, they just do the managed authentication, either cloud only, or they use password hash synchronization. It's actually the minority that uses federation. It's usually because of some compliancy thing that they're not allowed to. Yeah.
Why is it an option for my dentist? You know what I mean? Like, I just don't get it. I think that they have just done the typical Microsoft, the bad Microsoft thing, right? Because Microsoft is pretty good these days, but they've done the typical bad Microsoft thing of offering technology that's too powerful to people who don't know how to use it. So I just sort of wonder if there should be maybe a O365 Lite, right? For most organizations who want their email and they want their OneDrive and they maybe want their Okta, right? And they maybe want this list of the 20 most popular apps for companies, right? For OAuth. But, you know, if you try to throw anything exotic into it, it maybe, yeah, throws some warnings, or it's not necessarily easy to abuse in the ways that we're seeing it abused. I don't know. That's just a thought.
Well, I think they're already quite moving in the direction of having more secure defaults. For example, with the OAuth stuff, they're moving away from that users can approve things entirely and moving to trusted applications and all that kind of stuff. So unlike on-prem AD, we do see quite some changes in the defaults and things improving. Are we there yet? That it's all very, it's all perfect? I don't think so. There's still quite some things to go, but it's always a development. And I don't consider smaller shops likely to set up ADFS because it's already quite complex. But maybe it should come with a bigger red warning label, that the principle of ADFS is to hand off a part of the trust to your on-prem infrastructure, which is probably going to get hacked at some point.
Yeah.
And then at least they're aware, because it's the whole principle of ADFS is not putting your credentials and the trust in your credentials or your user management in the cloud. So if you really realize that, then is it really weird that if you have the keys compromised that you can authenticate as anyone? I see this quite logical. It's like cause and effect. If you put your trust in on-prem, yeah, then if on-prem gets hacked, then you're screwed.
So look, I think we're close to wrapping this up, right? So let me just ask a last couple of questions. Like, what do you think the average enterprise, right, that hasn't paid much attention to its O365 environment, you know, because that's what it is. And it's weird too, because it's not like cloud when we used to say, when cloud meant AWS and EC2, you know, this is almost like, I think of O365 as almost being like a serverless environment, right? That's what it is. Often when people are talking about serverless, they're talking about building applications for serverless environments. But when you think about it, O365 and all of the, you know, all of the applications that come with it, it's basically a serverless environment. What should people be doing to, you know, as their top order of business, if they want to make sure or they want to do a better job of securing that environment? What's the key advice you would give them? You know, would you say, get rid of ADFS, do this, do that, get this logging thing? I mean, is there a standard boilerplate bit of advice?
Yeah, so ADFS, wouldn't recommend it unless you can be very sure that the ADFS server doesn't get compromised, or you consider a compromise of ADFS at the same level as a compromise of your cloud stuff. I mean, if you're fine with that, then I guess you're fine with that and you can use it. Second, I'm going to assume everyone has already implemented MFA, because if they didn't, then we shouldn't really be having this conversation. But then I really think they should be moving forwards to work with device compliancy and to limit access, not only with MFA, but really from devices that are trusted and that are managed, because that's much harder to fake. Even if you do use ADFS, I don't think you can put something in a token that it's from a trusted device. That's all on the Azure AD side. So that actually does mitigate this, as far as I know.
Now, look, we've kept this conversation confined mostly to, you know, a very narrow set of considerations. When it comes to future risks that you see around all this stuff, is there anything that springs to mind, stuff that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, so we see that MFA, as multi-factor authentication becomes more of the standard, attackers will move to other avenues of attack. And we've discussed the part of them using on-prem and then jumping to the cloud. But I also think that it's important to mention the whole trusted device and single sign-on, because even if you have your strictest policies and you only allow access from managed devices, as soon as an attacker has code execution rights on that device, they are on a trusted device, they can just single sign on to whatever they want in the cloud as that user. And then, it's really easy if you have code execution on the host. And it's just something that I think will be next, because right now it's just still too easy to hack into the cloud by guessing credentials or phishing for credentials plus MFA. And as long as that's profitable, then actors will do that. But if that's not profitable anymore, I think it will be back to the regular malware phishing, gaining access to laptops, and then they can just abuse existing functionality to do the single sign-on and still get access to the cloud. And if you are them as admin, then you can even still steal these single sign-on tokens using Mimikatz, for example, which also has Azure AD support since this summer. And
really?
Then you're back with doing the same things as doing the on-prem.
How does Mimikatz AD, like for Azure AD, work? How does that work?
Well, that was my question. So I wrote a blog at the beginning of the summer, I think, about like using the single sign-on, and I found some easy ways to like call an executable, and you would get a single sign-on token for whichever you wanted to sign in on. And I was like, well, I mean, This probably interacts with something that's in LSS, but that's all difficult stuff. You got to reverse engineer. There's probably some key material somewhere. I don't know how all this works, but if anyone else wants to pick it up, then be my guest. And of course, then Benjamin, who I talk to sometimes, he came on the line and said, well, I know something about looking at LSS. And he basically made a module that dumps all the Azure AD information. It's called the cloud authentication provider.
So this is like web LSAS horrible, web auth soup.
It's like JSON web tokens stored in LSAS.
Yeah, it's like the new shit is just crammed into the old shit. It's just unbelievable. You're depressing me now, man.
Yeah, and he was really like, well, I don't know how any of this Azure stuff works, but I dumped this. Can you do something with that? And took a few iterations to figure out what we were actually looking at. But in the end, we found a way to like steal the long-term single sign-on tokens from LSS, and then you can just move that from your compliant lockdown device onto your not-so-compliant, not-so-lockdown attacker device, and just single sign on to everything. I was recently working on this again, and I just made my own code, which like mimics the browser extension for Chrome. So you have the browser extension for Chrome, and what it does, it calls the Windows APIs that it does single sign on with your Office 365 account. I was like, well, I can do that, and I wrote a small Python program which just has the long-term primary refresh token key. It has it hard-coded in it. Doesn't matter. But now when I browse to Chrome to Office 365, it says, oh, hi, welcome. And it automatically signs me in using a token I stole from somewhere. And it's just nice because it works.
And the world spins around the sun. Everything is a circle. Everything is a circle. Everything repeats. The universe blew up. It's the Big Bang. And then gravity pulls it back together and then it explodes again. Yeah. So that's sort of, you know, I'm doing the mind blown thing, but yeah, no, it makes sense that this is where we wind up, right? No easy fixes, no easy solutions. An administrator is an administrator, right?
Yes. And if you get on his workstation, then it's kind of game over.
That's party time. Okay. Well, Dirk-Jan Mollema, thank you so much for joining us to talk through all of this. It was great to talk to you, and yeah, I hope we can do it again in the future. Thank you for the primer. It's been very educational.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for inviting me.
That was Dirk-Jan Mollema there with a chat about all things Microsoft Cloud. Big thanks to him for that, and big thanks to the Hewlett Foundation Cyber Initiative for funding this work. I will be back next week with another weekly show. There's no weekly show this week because even though you're hearing this, I'm on break. The magic of broadcasting. So yeah, until next week, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.